Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. On November 13th, the warming room at 310 Division Street opened. After a lengthy battle between Northumberland County and the town of Cobourg, an agreement was reached. So what does this mean for Transition House? More importantly, what does it mean for unsheltered people and the community? On today's show, I'm talking to Ike Nwibe, the Executive Director of Transition House. He will walk us through these early days of the warming room. He will take us inside the inspections and changes that forced the shelter on Chapel Street to reduce the number of beds from 10 to 22. And he will update us on the status of things, from the Citizens Liaison Committee to the opening of the upper floors. You will hear what's going to happen shortly. He will also share the reaction he is getting from users who are anxiously awaiting the completion of the facility. I'm delighted to welcome back Transition House Executive Director Ike Nwibe. Good to see you again, Ike.
Thank you for having me.
Many people may be aware that Warming Room has opened at 310 Division Street. Can you give us an update on the status of the Warming Room?
So as of November 13th, we had the go-ahead to be able to open our doors to start supporting members of our community who may be living rough or basically don't have a place to go. The warming room is been open since then, and then we have staff on ground, we have resources available to support folks who might be in need of those services.
How many spaces, or what is the capacity that you have at the moment?
So as of now, we're looking at supporting about 20 people at any given time, and then although the capacity for that floor as per fire safety and all that is actually 50, and that includes staff. However, we're keeping the capacity at 20 to be able to support the clients who need the space.
You've mentioned twice now having resources and being able to support. What supports are you providing?
So staff members are trained in helping to de-escalate situations. Situations could be like maybe interpersonal issues between clients and all that. But there are also issues within that somebody might present when they show up at the warming room, for instance, where somebody needs support navigating resources that are within the community. Maybe in terms of getting employment, in terms of housing, and in terms of income, and so on and so forth, or even mental health and addiction supports. All those are still readily there, available, like staff members are able to interact with folks and also be able to redirect clients accordingly based on all these resources that we have in our community.
How does this compare to what was being done previously?
Thank you. At the previous locations where we've had the warming room, in the past, it's usually open from, say, 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. the next day. However, at 310 Division, the space is open 24/7, regardless of when somebody needs it. Somebody... if they need to one place to go, they need some food to eat, they need to do their shower, they need to do their laundry or anything like that, There's no time. We don't have any specific time when they can only access those resources. It's available 24/7. So that's how it's different from the previous place.
This is supposed to be created so that nobody can really say they're being forced out onto the street or they should not be wandering around, that there's a place that they can go. Is it meeting that mandate?
Yes. From transition houses, perspective, we were ready to get started with the operations of the warming hub. It's just that what delayed the process was the ECE bylaw requirement, ECE license requirements, which both the operator as well as the owner of the property had to get. But fortunately, we're able to scale that, get over that hurdle, and then we started our operations. But something that we've made clear from beginning is that Transition House has policies. We have, our own protocol, how we go about things. For instance, we care about the safety of everyone within the space. We care about the safety of clients, the safety of staff members, as well as visitors, and even other community agencies that come to the site to offer support, like to offer wraparound support in the space. So as a result of that, there's need for us to have policies in place, rules and regulation and all that. So, which is why we do intake. At intake, clients would be taken through what are the requirements, what are those the responsibilities on their own part, what are their rights and duties. And then some of which is, for instance, drug use, which for a long time we've tried to educate members of our community that Transition House does not encourage drug use on site, and then we're going to be transferring that same rule to the new facility as well. So for folks who are in need of our service, those who are in need of a space where to keep warm and all that, there is also that requirement on their end to ensure that they're abiding by the rules, not just what Transition House wants, but what the entire community has spoken loudly about over the past months.
Part of having 310 Division was in order that people who are unsheltered could find a place to go. Are you going to be able to impact that desire that people have to see those wandering around, those unable to find something to do during the day and night?
Yes, then thanks for clarifying that, for the clarification. While we have the warming hub there to support folks who are, in need of the services we offer, I think it's important to also clarify that it is, like the individuals have that choice. The persons who have the right to be able to decide if that's what they want or that's not what they want, because they will be held accountable based on their own behaviors and at the facility. While there's a place where maybe the police or bylaw or anyone finds an individual, they can of course talk them into going to 310 Division and all that, a place where they can stay safe, they have food, they keep warm, do shower, and so on and so forth. But it's also important to respect that, the right of individuals to be able to make their own decisions. Like, we're not, 310 Division is not to be seen as some kind of a jail or some kind of a place where to lock people we don't like away from, our faces or something and all that. It's a place, the option is there. An individual can on their own choose to go there and choose not to go there. And the same way, the various policy makers, our various agencies working on, like especially the law enforcement agents, all have the duty to respect, that right of choice, like an individual can decide to accept service or not.
There is a lot of debate, though, now, not just in Coburg, but across the country about forcing people into particular situations. What are your thoughts on that approach and how it might impact what you do?
Yeah, well, in my opinion, I think for somebody who still has the ability to decide on what they want and what they don't want, having been offered like the various resources available, the various information that they need to be able to make an informed decision. You know, that is on one hand. So we need to respect that they have that ability to decide on their own and all that. But where an individual is clearly has all the resources available, or probably they lack the ability to be able to process the information or to process what is in their like an info the information that is in their best interests, or to decide what would eventually help them to improve their situation, where somebody lacks that ability to be able to do that. That is where, we might be talking about, okay, probably a trustee or something, maybe a family member or something like that, to be able to make that decision on their behalf, or probably skilled, I mean, licensed, social workers. You know, we have professionals in this in the field, which is where, for instance, the concept of somebody being informed, like somebody who is clearly whose mental health is clearly deteriorating, and then they're not accepting help, they're not seeking help, they're also not accepting help, then it makes it necessary for, professionals in the field who have been trusted with that ability to be able to make good judgment in the interest of that person and in the interest of the general public, to make the decision to maybe have that person probably admitted into some kind of facility where they receive the needed care, and then they get that so that they can become better, and then they come back in the in the community. So that's my own position on this, but I don't think that for individuals who are clearly able to make decisions about what they want and what how best they can be served and all that, they're making an informed decision. I don't think it's the place of any other person to more like force them into something that they don't believe would work for them.
Under the town's bylaws, there are many restrictions, rules, and regulations. How are you managing the demands of the emergency care establishment bylaw requirements?
So the in terms of the demands, like we went through that process for Ten Chapel, our current facility, well, one of our facilities, we went through that process, and fortunately we were able to meet all the requirements in areas where we know that it's almost impossible for us to meet those requirements. For instance, maybe like having security on site at Ten Chapel, for instance, like the facility has operated for a given number of years, and then based on our own security procedures within the space, there's nothing that speaks to the fact that, oh, there is need for us to have a security within the site. So this is separate from having security, like mobile security or something like that, which that's a totally different discussion entirely. But in terms of having security protocol, like being able to provide all the necessary supporting documents in terms of our fire safety plan, in terms of our floor plan, and all, how we engage with the community and so on and so forth, all that we're able to provide. And then we did the same thing for 310 division as well. So that with all of which, when we did that of 310 division, it was more, in my opinion, it was just a straightforward thing as well, in the sense that we've had the experience from that of Ten Chapel, and then it was a matter of also, okay, this is what the town, what the requirements are. And then we got to work and then ensure that all those policies are in place and all that. So it's been it's been challenging. At the same time, I think it's it wasn't impossible. We did it, and with the support of the various stakeholders and all that, we crossed all the T's, we dotted all the I's, and then now the facility is good to go.
There was a lot of public concern and political concern about monitoring people outside the building. Have you been able to do that?
So the what as of today, we have the mobile security monitoring the immediate like surroundings of 310 Division. So any concerns, they're able to identify concerns, they're able to intervene where there is need for it and things like that. Yeah. So in terms of that requirement, I would say that yes, we are meeting that. I also know that they have their own, how do I call it, their own protocol of how they operate and all that, and they're operating within the within that. And I am aware that members of the public have been, especially the immediate neighbors, and all they've been provided like a phone number, contact information, where to who to reach out to should there be any security concerns or anything around garbage or anything like that. And then somebody will be there to be able to attend to it 24/7.
Right now, all the services that Transition House is responsible for, you're at capacity.
Except for the woman hub.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I want to talk about, you've referred to it a couple of times, about a recent inspection by the Coburg Fire Department. Can you describe what happened and the reasons why the fire department picked this particular time to do an inspection?
In terms of why this period was picked, I am actually not sure. But the challenge is that it came at a time when we felt that our services are needed even more in our community now than ever, because each time we are seeing more people becoming homeless. We're seeing more people, choosing to live rough rather than, going to shelter. The reason being that, okay, the shelter available, okay, I can't come in there with my dog. I can't stay in the same room with my partner and things like that. So, but we needed to do what we had to do given the resources we had at our disposal. As of December, sorry, the summer of 2023, there was that need for us to increase capacity. And then we approached, being that it's not something that we could, just decide on our own, we had to bring in the fire department for them to advise us, like, okay, what's the best way to go about this? And then they gave us the number of options, a number of recommendations. Do all this, then you can increase your capacity to this number, to actually 25, up to 25. We did those actions. However, we didn't increase up to 25, we increased to 22. And we have staff on site 24/7. We have staff doing the wellness checks, doing what we call the fire watch, which is also documented each time to ensure that everyone is safe. In case of any eventuality, we know that we are able to we'll be proactive in addressing the issue. But at some point, the bylaw came on prop. Well, they reached out saying that they needed to do and a walkthrough of the building and all that. So, of course, they came on site, did the walkthrough of the building. During that walkthrough, they found a few items, one of which was because it was around the same time when clients were celebrating Halloween. So we procured pumpkins and all that. And then one of them, I think a squirrel knocked it over or so. That was the night before the morning when they showed up. And then they said, "Oh, this one, what's that?" I explained what that was, and I was surprised to see that as one of the conditions, making us look like we are, an irresponsible organization. The way it was presented in that report, and despite the explanation we cited and all that, they identified a few other items, of which about 70 to 80% of those items were addressed within a few days of that visit to the site. But unfortunately, one of the items was for us to be able to present a fire safety plan that says that we are at the number of clients that are allowed in that building is 10. So necessitating us working with the fire department again to come up with that fire safety plan to give that number and all that, of which failure to provide that could mean us being shut down because it will be rated as we are not complying with the laws and all that. So these are some of the things we had to navigate during that period. But fortunately, we were able to get over it, and then we finally got a license.
Was anyone put out on the street without an
Yes.
alternative?
Yes, like when the we were at 22, capacity was 22, and then we needed to reduce to 10. We're given the deadline before, after which they can come in at any time, and of course we know the next action would be for us to be shut down or something like that. So apart from that, no member of our board who are all giving their services for free, they're volunteering their time, their resources, their knowledge, and all that. Nobody wants to put themselves in that kind of a liability because of the conditions. If you're fined through the ECE, the conditions are pretty weighty, and nobody wants to go through that. So we had to now discontinue intake of clients. So as clients leave the space, because one thing in the homeless community is the fact that there's high turnover, folks come and go and all that. So you have to, that's why we update everyone about the availability of space at every given time. So when clients leave, unfortunately, the option for them to return was no longer there. So such individuals will end up on the street just because we are strategically and trying to ensure that we comply with the laws, one of the conditions being that we operate at capacity of 10.
While you were talking, I was a little confused about what motivated the bylaw officer to do the inspection at that particular time.
We had the fire department came in July of this year, of course, and then they did a walkthrough of the building as well, and then I think it was a new inspector or something, and then they needed to like familiarize themselves with the facility, so they did a walkthrough of that, walked them through the whole thing, they made some recommendations and all that. That the whole recommendations that were made, the whole notice, the whole items in the notice that we were given were addressed. Everything on that list was addressed. So I am not now sure if that is connected to, the
But
town.
nobody said to you, "This is we're coming," or "I'm following up," or there was no clear indication to you or to your staff that "I'm coming through because of this reason." Am I
They
understanding that correctly?
did when we got the license for 10 Chapel, it was given on three different conditions. Because part of the requirement for us to have a license for 10 Chapel
Okay.
was for us to have.
I appreciate the complexity of this, but I'd like a straightforward answer that to did were you given a reason why at that particular time Was there, did somebody come and did the bylaw officer say, well, I'm following up or I'm coming to do this? I just want to be clear about what motivated him or her to come on that particular day and do an inspection.
That's what I'm trying to explain. Like the we had three conditions for us to meet up with, one of which was to have the fire safety plan, to have a waste receptacle, like an enclosure around the waste receptacle at 10 Chapel Street. And then they gave us, the timelines and all that. For each of these, we were following up with them at what stage we were and all that. So they reached out at some point and said, we will be coming to the site to do a walkthrough of the building. So in my opinion, I felt it's related to, the license that we were issued and all that. And being that we were pretty cooperative and all that, we said, oh, by all means, we notified the clients, and all the staff members about the action, and then they came on site and did all the work for.
Now that you're moving into the 310 division space in phases, the Citizens Committee has been struck. Can you bring us up to speed as to how that process is going and how the communication between yourselves and the citizens are going?
You're talking about the community liaison committee? Oh, okay. So we had the training of that. There was a training that was organized for everyone who is interested in serving in that committee, because it's in my opinion, it's one thing to say that you actually want to serve in that committee. It's another thing to really understand what does it take to play that role. So they did that training prior to folks now putting in their expression of interest, their applications to say, I want to do this, so that they have a better understanding of what they're going in for. So it was completed, applications were received, and then, they did the interviews and all that, and I believe that selection has been completed. So at this stage, a session is now being organized to bring folks together and then have like a discussion as to how things are going to progress, like in terms of the understanding the expectations, what are the responsibilities, and so on and so forth. So that's where we are at this point. I believe the last was actually identifying what date works for everyone, for folks to come together and have that conversation.
Are people excited about this? Are they enthusiastic? Are they kind of, who cares? What are they saying? The actual potential users, what are they saying about it?
So we hold our residents meeting at 10 Chapel, for example, every week. And during the resident meeting, there's an opportunity for us to bring the clients up to speed in terms of this is where we're at as far as the property is concerned and all that. And then I have not seen anything less than enthusiasm from the clients themselves. Like they've always been, they come to me even outside of those meetings, they come to me and say, oh, how is it going now? Like, when is it going to be ready? When do we move? And all that. So you see that from them. And then even folks at the warming hub, I've seen people come in the space and they're just wowed that, oh, they made this for us. That was what I heard from a community member. Like, they made this for us and all that. So that's the thing. Like, members of the community are happy about the fact that for a long time there were clients who will come to me and say that they feel like they're second class citizens. They feel like they don't matter, but they based on certain rhetoric in the community and all that. But with this development, the opening of 310 division and the plan to actually transfer shelter services into 310 division as well, it's a step forward for us as a community. Like, yes, we care about everyone, regardless of what differences, regardless of what their home, their housing status is, and all that. So that's something I think about, and it keeps me going.
What should we be watching for in the upcoming days and weeks then?
Sorry, say that again.
What should we be watching for in the upcoming days and weeks?
In the upcoming days and weeks, we are looking at operating, serving folks with the dignity that they deserve, with that's continuing what we have at the warming hub currently, and gradually also now including the shelter services, and then looking at also opening the transitional housing unit, that's a segment of our program as well. So those are the things that we have going on, and there's just so much opportunities. I can't wait for us to start celebrating the holidays out of 310 division as well. I'm pretty sure that the clients are all looking forward to that.
Agnubey, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
That was Ike Nwibe, Executive Director of Transition House. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.